Hello, everyone. I'm Stephen Strang, and welcome to the Strang Report. I've been privileged recently to interview some pretty high-profile people. You may remember my interview with Dennis Prager and also with Glenn Beck. Well, today I have the privilege of interviewing Dr. Steve Turley, who has more than a million subscribers to his Turley Talk, and it's something I subscribe to, and I had the opportunity to interview him, even though I'm doing focus mostly on my new book. But in a way, it ties together. Now, he is a secular commentator with deep religious beliefs, as you'll hear in my interview. It was such a great interview that we went way beyond the 25 minutes or so I usually do. And so we are going to break this into two parts. Now you're going to see the first part where we really talk about what's happening in the culture and so forth. And then the second part, which I'll post as a separate YouTube video and podcast, is going to be more on the spiritual aspect. You don't want to miss either one of them, but stay tuned for my interview, my exclusive interview with Dr. Steve Turley of Turley Talks.
Welcome to the Strang Report with Stephen Strang, the founder of Charisma. The Strang Report aims to encourage you to experience the power of the Holy Spirit and to discuss spiritual issues facing the church, our nation, and the world.
Well, Dr. Steve Turley, thank you for being on my podcast. I told you before we started that I actually watch your podcast with some regularity and have a lot of respect for what you've built up over the years. And your podcast is different. It's positive. You can actually watch it and feel good. After watching the mainstream media, you get the feeling that we're losing. But you have built quite a following saying, hey, we're winning.
Yeah, that's right. Well, first of all, thanks, Stephen, for just the honor of being with you. But that's right. Yeah, it's something I started my now. What is it? I started in 2016. So we're getting to 7 years of making the same argument, the long sustained argument. It's actually relatively simple, and that is a new world is rising, a very, very different world from the one that we're living in currently, because it's a world that's going back to nation, culture, custom, tradition, most particularly our religious traditions. And so it's in effect fusing sort of technology with tradition. So it's keeping the technology that we've amassed over the last couple of hundred years, particularly in the modernist West. But unlike the modernist West, it doesn't pit tradition and technology against each other. I like to say it's more of a world like Star Wars than it is Star Trek. Star Trek could care less about religion. It could care less about faith. It is a modernist techie's dream. It's a Christopher Hitchens dream, as it were. But Star Wars is mystical. It's run by an evil emperor who's in charge with these eternal forces and so on. And then to fight against him, well, we're using, you know, the weapons, physical weapons and so forth. But the true Jedi recognize it's a much deeper battle between the forces of evil. And this world that's rising is much more like that. It sees technology and tradition as being concomitant with each other. They belong together. There's a technical term called archaeofuture. Some have even called it techno-primitive. But the world that we're seeing emerge is a very civilizational, traditionalist world that's rising. Unfortunately, we're going to be one of the last ones to get there, because we've been in the West, the United States in particular, we've been on the apex of the modern secular revolution that's been going on since the 18th century. So we'll be one of the last ones to get, but we're going to get there. We're already seeing signs of it in all kinds of places in our nation.
Well, I'm going to drill down on that. Yeah. And that comparison to Star Trek and Star Wars is very interesting in my opinion. And, you know, you defy all the stereotypes. You're a college professor, at least you have been, and you're not super, super woke, you know. My you know, not that you'd care, but my own father was a college professor at several Christian colleges. So I kind of grew up with that. You're very intellectual, but I don't think you come across, you're not anti-intellectual, but you don't come across as an egghead on your,
right,
your podcast. So, and also with all due respect to my late father, college professors are usually boring. They just are, you know, they can't handle themselves in front of a camera. They can handle themselves in front of a class or in a maybe academic argument. But how in the world did you get from that world and being educated in England and different things that I found when I researched you to where you are now?
It's very interesting. Yeah, it's a really unlikely journey, but you know, in the end, well, first, my first degree was in classical guitar. That's I met my wife at a music conservatory, so I have degrees in music and theology. So I like to say I went where the money is, you know. Ha ha, right? But I think being a performer, I did have to learn how to engage with an audience. So I think I learned back in my early 20s, all the way up to my early 30s when I was a professional classical guitarist. I mean, I had to learn how to engage with an audience. So that was one thing. When we started having a family, I started having children, I knew as much as I loved music, I knew that was not the profession for me. I didn't want to have to travel every week, 40, 50 weeks out of the year to make a living. That was no way to raise a family. And I was already studying theology formally through a seminary. And a job opening came about at a classical school, which I didn't even really know what was. And so classical schools is this amazing renaissance of education, the education that defined Western civilization for 2,200 years, I would find out. All of our great classical, or all of our great Christian minds of the past, going all the way up to someone like C.S. Lewis or something, were all educated classically. And that's where you learn the great books and Latin and Greek and theology. It's the center that holds a worldview together. We have a renaissance of those schools going on right now. Around 1994, there are only about 10 classical schools. Now they estimate there's over 700 in our nation. It's absolutely amazing. Wow. So I got caught up on that. This was around 2002. I got caught up in that wave, and I really was attracted to teaching there because it emphasized truth, goodness, and beauty. So I could really stress my love of aesthetics, but in a theological and Christian context, which, you know, the classical music world's kind of lacking, to say the least. The arts and croissant world is about as bad as the university world on that. So that it was a way I could raise, as a place I could raise my family. All four of my kids went there and the like. So I taught there for a number of years, got my PhD. I did a lot of study on what's called post-secular studies we could talk about. And this is a field of scholarship that recognizes that the world that we're seeing is actually getting much, much, much more religious, perhaps more religious than we've ever imagined in terms of just a religious renewal. And we're talking all across the board, you know, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism, Confucianism, Shintoism, you name it. It's just this, it's this extraordinary move where, again, out of a modern secular age into a postmodern, post-secular age. And I remember it was around the 2016 campaign. And I remember just listening to commentators on Trump in particular, right when he threw his hat in the ring. And a lot of them didn't quite understand Trump. They didn't know really what sense to make of him. He wasn't talking in the traditional sort of neocon way that someone like a Ted Cruz was talking, or a Marco Rubio. And I remember especially a lot of, Christian radio conservative commentators not understanding Trump. They weren't getting this nationalist, populist, traditionalist paradigm he was drawing from. So I had a good friend of mine who was in charge of marketing at the classical school, and he was this online genius. He was just amazing with social media. And I said to him, you know, I'm feeling really frustrated here. And he supported Trump at the time, sort of supported Trump very early, as I did, because I saw him as Pat Buchanan 2.0. And I was a big Pat Buchanan fan back in the day. I saw him as really the first post-globalist candidate, ironically, him and Ross Perot. But Ross Perot didn't have the traditionalist element to him. So I said, you know, they don't really understand what's going on with it. I wish there was a way I could kind of just communicate that frustration and maybe give a counterpoint. And he suggested I start a YouTube channel and put out my analysis of the election and so forth. I threw it away. I didn't pay a lot of attention to it. Months went by. The frustration continued to build. Trump got the nomination, obviously. But there was still the Republican Party didn't quite know what to make of it. Brexit had happened on June 23rd, 2016. And Brexit, was arguing, were the same, what animated Brexit were the same dynamics that were animating Trump. A new post-globalist world is rising. It's changing everything. And God,
so in other words, you sort of figured this out yourself. It wasn't that you were part of a cohort of intellectuals who thought this through. Books have been written about it, of course, but you came to this realization yourself.
It was through the help of the post-secular scholars. So the post-secular scholars weren't writing about Trump per se. They're just providing the frames of analysis that helped me make sense of Trump, because they recognized that the globalist world was creating a sense of border insecurity among more and more populations. They felt more and more vulnerable as they saw their borders disappear, both economically as well as in terms of mass immigration. They were getting economically insecure when they're seeing their manufacturing jobs go overseas, seeing all this finance reallocate in urban areas that were getting gentrified, leaving rural populations highly unemployed. And then they were seeing this extraordinary cultural insecurity emerge, because they were seeing the traditions and the customs and the faith that they've loved for generations recast as bigoted and racist and all kinds of phobic. And they just couldn't recognize the country that they were living in anymore. So these are post-secular scholars talking this way. And then you listen to a Trump speech and what he's saying. What is he saying? We're going to build a wall. We're going to bring manufacturing back home. And we're going to say Merry Christmas. And we're going to overturn Roe v. Wade. And you're like, it's all there. This is what people aren't. And they're more. And I was frustrated because, God bless them, but a lot of these radio personalities were more fixated on his personal life and so forth. Not that that doesn't matter, but I think we had to understand that one's political policies and political platforms is an extension of one's moral character. I think there is a fundamental difference between someone who has very conservative, timeless political sentiments, who nevertheless has yet to learn how to live up to those objective standards in their private life, versus someone who is woke, leftist, insane political sentiments, and is also, you know, pretty crazy in their private life as well. One is inconsistent, the one is horrifyingly consistent, let's put it that way. And so I found that those were the frames of reference that I could use to not just analyze Trump and analyze Brexit, analyze all these elections that were happening in Europe at the same time, and Austria and Bulgaria and so, and France, the tension with the EU, what I call the bullies in Brussels, the European Union, understanding the rise of Putin, understanding why China was going back to Confucianism, the rise of Hindu nationalism in India, or a neo-Ottoman identity in Turkey. This was a paradigm I found that could be used in a very fruitful way and hopefully bring some optimism to our analysis.
And I think that it did. And what you say about Trump interests me a lot, because I've written 4 books about Trump. And, I'm a Christian journalist. I've always covered things from the Christian perspective. That's my background, that's my audience. And I have seen very much what you said about, you call them radio commentators, sort of the James Dobsons of the world. And you're right, in Christian conservative circles, if somebody has several divorces and is known to have affairs or accused of it or whatever, they're just persona non grata.
Exactly.
And in fact, a lot of the evangelical leaders, you know, those are Bible believing people who at least try to follow the Bible, they were for Ted Cruz.
Right.
You know, other than a bad word here or there, Ted Cruz is, you know, has pretty,
pretty solid
bona fides.
Yeah.
And I backed Ted Cruz because I knew it was going to take somebody really, really, really tough and almost mean to upset things in Washington or even to survive.
Yeah.
The thing that interested me is that there were a number of Pentecostal modern day prophets, people who say the Lord speaks to them, who said 10 years before that God was raising up someone to be a trumpet. A lot of times it was kind of in figurative terms, but then more specifically about Trump himself. And it's, how could this be?
Yes.
But for me, it was his policies. I could overlook the fact he had been married three times, and I'm a very strong proponent of marriage. I'm still with the first wife. I mean,
as,
not just
as am I, yes.
But I mean, that's what I believe. But I could look that over because he supported the policies that I thought were important, and he at least stood up to the bullies.
Right.
Now, if you talk to some people, you talk about the seven major areas of influence in our culture, including the government, the business, arts and entertainment, media, the church, the family. It's like the other side, the lefties, dominate almost all of them.
And
in the last few years, they've started canceling. I mean, there's always been cancellation to some extent, but my last book was called God and Cancel Culture. Mm-hmm. And I basically talked about how bad everything was. And I learned that everybody, at least my readers, know how bad everything was, and they didn't want to be reminded. So I'm encouraged by you. You know, you watch, it's like going into Alice in Wonderland. I mean, watching your podcast is wonderful. The good guys are winning, the bad guys are losing. I love your expression called go woke, go broke. Now, other people have said that. Did you? I don't even know who came up with that.
No, I didn't coin that. I heard that as well on the grapevine. Yeah. I could have TM'd it, I guess. But
and my favorite thing lately is Dylan Mulvaney. If I see that you've written about Dylan Mulvaney, I'll tune in to see what wild thing you have to say about that.
Oh, my.
But, you know, with Budweiser, it looked like they wouldn't back off, and then they backed off a little bit, and now they're trying to cozy up to the left, and they're real concerned about their ESG score and all that kind of stuff. In fact, let me interrupt this very intellectual, and let's take a rabbit trail to talk about Dylan. Where did that come from? You know, here you've got this B-level actor. I looked on YouTube, and he has a fairly decent singing voice, at least in my opinion. And then he came out as non-binary. And then the next thing you come out as a little girl or something. I mean, where is he just looking for attention, or is this part of something bigger? And where in the world is that trend going the other way? We used to never hear about transvestites. Now we see them in public libraries reading stories to little children.
It's very interesting. And it's difficult to figure out what on earth is happening here, other than, you know, just a Romans one, you know, they just, God's given them over to reprobate mind at this point. It's, you know, we have to remember that for decades, we were told that logic was a form of racism. You know, we found out math this year was racist, right? And feminists have been arguing that logic is has been a patriarchal tool for domination for a couple of decades now. And I mean, again, just to get a sense, these are academics who are, this is key, arguing that logic is somehow patriarchal and racist, right? So, I mean, just listeners can obviously...
I took a course on logic when I was in university. It was required.
But it
wasn't this kind of logic that you're talking about.
Of course. And then the absurdity is they have to use logic to argue against logic. It's just, you know, it's crazy. Aristotle figured that out, right? You know, I could prove the law of non-contradiction to you in a heartbeat. Just argue with me. You've proven my point. You know, you're taking one position over it against its opposite. So in many respects, I just think the art of thinking has died on the left. And so now it's just pure intimidation on the one hand. But then there is this, once you've lost the capacity to make distinctions, once you've lost logic, you've lost the capacity to make a distinction. A is not non-A. All right? And again, nobody can argue against it without arguing for it. If you say, no, I don't believe that, and I say, yes, you do, and you say, no, I don't, you're proving my point. A is not non-A, right? You're going back and forth. But it's not just a law of thought, it's a law of being. So if I were to draw a box, and I would put Stephen in there, and then outside that box, I draw a much, much, much bigger box, and I put non-Stephen out there. Well, what's included in Stephen? Well, you know, broadcaster, you know, husband, father, man, you know, citizen, blah, 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 all these attributes. Well, what's in non-Stephen? Well, you know, women, garbage collectors, you know, you name it, presidents, trees, flowers, rabbits, quasars, you name it. Now, if I were to erase that original small box and say, now there's no difference between A and non-A, logic is racist or logic is patriarchal, there's no difference between A and non-A. Well, now you're a man, you're a broadcaster, and you're a tree, and you're a squirrel, and the sense of reality begins to implode in on itself. And the rest of the world is laughing at us. This is one of the advantages of having an international analysis. 90% of the world, and that's not an exaggeration, we're only about 17% of the world's population right now. The West was 30% of the world, just over 30% at the beginning of the 20th century. Because of our adoption of lifestyle values, we are demographically imploding. And so, except for the conservative Christians, which is, again, one of the most optimistic parts of things. Conservative Christians are having more kids than ever in the West, and that's why we're taking over. But the liberal side of the West, starting with Europe, but now it just caught up with the United States back in 2008 when we went under the 2.1 replacement level as an aggregate, what we began to see is that the percentage of the West, the percentage the West makes up of the overall global population just shrank dramatically. So we're going to be no more than 10% of the global population by 2050. So when I say 90% of the world, including a lot of us here in the West, is looking at us and just absolutely shaking their head going, you guys have gone insane. I'm not exaggerating. That's Putin has been able to weaponize that, for right or for wrong. He has been able to weaponize that in his campaign to take Eastern Ukraine by basically saying we are emancipating ourselves from the globalist West that's trying to impose its woke values through NATO. NATO is an instrument of imposing liberal woke values. Now, he could be totally lying. He could be totally, we can be completely cynical over that. The fact that when he talks that way, 90% of the world goes, yeah, that's true, shows just how much we've lost the respect of the moral respect of the population. So I think it's a combination of just the fact that we've lost the capacity to think. And I think too that what we're seeing is just this incredible descent of American leadership capacity that we did have very strongly in our own Western sphere during the Cold War, and then in the world post 1991, we had it, but we've lost it with these woke values. And so I remember after Obergefell passed that legalized same-sex marriage, I said, guys, you don't understand. I was telling some people that were more on the left, center left, they're not extreme, but I just tried to explain to them, you don't understand what kind of geopolitical disaster this is. The rest of the world is looking at this saying, that's it. They've lost their minds. This is the beginning of the end for these guys because they're all going to traditional family values. That's the new thing right now, especially it's totally practical just to try to overcome the demographic winter that so much of the world has gone through in the 20th century. They recognize in order to get their population vibrancy back, they have to adopt pro-life measures like Viktor Orban in Hungary is doing, or the Law and Justice Party in Poland is doing, or in Georgia, and even Putin. And of course, China has to do it now because of their disastrous one-child policy and the rampant abortion that accompanied that. So these are the things that I think in the end, we don't realize that when we push these woke values, we are actually engaged in committing sort of international suicide in terms of our prestige in the geopolitical world.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. And of course, we had to break it into two parts. It was just interesting that the second part was mostly on the spiritual things, which of course is the topic of my book. We did talk about it a little bit. And I've often said to myself, if Steve Turley can be so bullish on the fact that the world, as he describes it, is kind of shifting to the right, I need to be as more bullish about the power of the Holy Spirit to not only change people's lives, but to affect our culture. And I'm encouraged by what he has to say, and I hope you'll be encouraged about my book. You can get it on stevestrangbooks.com, also on mycharismashop.com. It's available really most places that Christian books are sold. It actually releases on May 16th. I know a lot of you will see this afterwards, but I am passionate to get out the word about this book. I'm going to be traveling, and we're also going to post this partly because I'm not able to do a live podcast every day. So I want you to check out my book. I hope you'll share it with friends. I hope you'll be motivated. I hope it'll cause you to want more of the Lord in your life, which is available through the power of the Holy Spirit for the asking, as I explain in my book. And remember, tune in again, look for it on my YouTube channel for the second part of this very important, boy, he enjoyed it, I enjoyed it, we just kept talking. And so we'll share the next one on the next episode of The Strang Report. Thank you for watching, thank you for subscribing. Thank you for hitting the little bell, which will notify you when I have a podcast coming up. I really appreciate you. Send me your ideas. Send me your comments. God bless you. And tune in again tomorrow for another episode of The Strang Report.
Thank you for listening to The Strang Report with Stephen Strang. Stay up to date with the latest episodes by subscribing on YouTube and Rumble, as well as your favorite podcast app at cpnshows.com. Get the latest reports delivered directly to your inbox by subscribing to the newsletter at strangreport.com. In an upside-down world, there is only one way to stay grounded. Life is full of twists and turns, successes and setbacks. How can you reach your God-given potential and achieve your dreams? With over four decades of reporting on the move of the Holy Spirit around the world, Stephen E. Strang has firsthand experience of how the Holy Spirit has led him on a remarkable journey of faith and a successful life. In his new book, Spirit-Led Living in an Upside-Down World, he will invest his true life lessons into the hearts of readers as he reveals his secrets to having a successful life led by the Holy Spirit. Go to booksbystevestrang.com to pre-order your copy today.